It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. Broadcasting from Signal Hill in Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 34 degrees, we're looking for likely snow for the rest of the day. Cloudy skies for sure, high near 38 today. East wind to 30 miles per hour, gusts as high as 40. Chance of precipitation is 70% today. Total daytime snow accumulation less than a half an inch, they're saying. Coming up on the midday news, Kodiak Republican Representative Louise Stutes, elected Speaker of the Alaska House. Kodiak Emergency Services Director makes an announcement yesterday. And teachers across the state become eligible to receive their COVID-19 vaccines. Those stories plus more about the VHF radio outage in Southeast after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The defense rests in the Senate impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump. NPR's Brian Naylor reports Trump's legal team argued the proceedings are part of a politically motivated witch hunt.
Trump attorney Michael Vanderveen called the House impeachment article constitutional cancel culture, part of a deliberate attempt by Democrats to smear and censor not only Trump, but those who voted for him.
The article of impeachment now before the Senate is an unjust and blatantly unconstitutional act of political vengeance.
Trump's attorneys played a 9-minute long video of numerous Democrats using the word fight, attempting to rebut charges that Trump incited the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol by calling on his supporters to fight like hell in a speech that day. Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal later called the video a false, dangerous, and distorted equivalence. Brian Naylor, NPR News.
Trump's team had until tomorrow night to make its arguments, but finished this afternoon with still no sign that Trump's at risk of being convicted. At least 17 Republicans would have to side with all the Senate Democrats and the independents who caucus with them for a conviction. But so far, few Republicans have indicated they might go against Trump when the Senate votes, possibly as soon as tomorrow. President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris met with a bipartisan group of governors and mayors today to talk about the administration's pandemic rescue package. Afterward, Arlington, Texas Mayor Jeff Williams said cities need help.
Our cities are a main economic engine, and we are now still in the middle of this pandemic with a lot of work to be done, and of course our funding is gone. We spent that at the end of December because that was the mandate, but yet we know that we have got to continue working on vaccines, testing, and get us through this.
Meanwhile, the CDC is out with long-awaited new guidelines for reopening schools to in-person learning. Sam Whitehead of member station WABE in Atlanta has details.
Universal masking, physical distancing, good hand hygiene, regular cleaning, and contact tracing.
All mitigation strategies provide some level of protection, but when implemented together or layered, they provide the greatest level of protection.
Dr. Rochelle Walensky leads the agency. The CDC's guidance says vaccinating teachers and school staff can provide an additional layer of mitigation, but isn't required for schools to return to in-person learning. Walensky stressed the CDC is not mandating schools reopen, or that schools that are already open close if they can't put these mitigation efforts in place. For NPR News, I'm Sam Whitehead in Atlanta.
Dow Jones Industrial Average closed up 27 points, ending the day at 31,458. You're listening to NPR News.
The nation. NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
The Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization has reported one new community transmission case of COVID-19 for the Kodiak Island Borough, bringing the total case count to 1,049 cases locally. Local active cases remain at 4. Kodiak Emergency Services Director Mike Tvenge announced during the Thursday COVID update that the Kodiak Emergency Services Operations Center had lowered the community risk from yellow to green.
This movement to green risk level by no means says we have stopped the virus. We still have active case counts in Kodiak and the rest of the state. However, right now our risk is reduced, and the Emergency Services Council would like to acknowledge this.
The green risk level limits patron capacity to 50%, and face coverings are now, quote, strongly recommended. Additionally, the state has expanded those allowed to schedule for the vaccine to those 50 and older, and those who have certain illnesses or who work in particularly at-risk professions, such as education staff, regardless of age. The particulars of this expansion, as well as health conditions and careers that qualify those over 50 for the vaccine, are available to read at the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. That's at dhss.alaska.gov. Well, teachers across the state became eligible to receive COVID-19 vaccines on Wednesday.
Excited, yes. Relieved, definitely felt like I won the lottery.
That's Elizabeth Dick, a German teacher at Anchorage School District, who got her first dose this afternoon at a local clinic. Dick says that she and other teachers have been intensely watching vaccine appointment websites, anticipating when the state would move to the next tier. She said she noticed when hundreds of appointment slots appeared, and she shared her observation with other teachers in a group chat.
We started texting yesterday morning, and I said, I think they're going to open it. And then somebody said, oh, a pharmacist friend said they're going to do all the teachers. And so then everyone started watching. And as soon as that press release dropped, they were all instantly on the phone making their appointments and just so excited. I mean, we're talking about maybe, you know, in a couple months, once we're immunized, we can actually meet up for dinner. We can see each other. So it's huge.
Dick is a high school teacher who's looking forward to seeing her students and is feeling more comfortable now with the extra protection. Undoubtedly, many Kodiak residents noticed the power outages yesterday evening. Fortunately, power has been restored to the entirety of the island. According to a press release from the Kodiak Electric Association, the issue yesterday came from a disconnect in the Terror Lake Dam transmission line, and the power is currently coming from the diesel generator system downtown. Helicopter inspection will be occurring with weather permitting access to the nature of the damage. KEA CEO Darren Scott said that it's a tricky process.
Getting access up into that mountain pass area where potentially the problem could be is going to be difficult. And depending on the problem, this could take a little while. So we'll try to get that information back to the community, because we are running diesel for a significant amount of time. That's a very, you know, expensive process for the whole town.
The diesel generators were kicked in to cover the whole town within 2.5 hours, although some areas were back online in as little as 20 minutes. KMXT also lost power and was not transmitting for some of that duration. We're happy to report we are back on the air, as you can tell. For updates on the situation and damages, look to the Kodiak Electric Association and KMXT Facebook pages. As soon as we know more, you will too. Kodiak Republican Representative Louise Stutes was elected the Speaker of the Alaska House yesterday, breaking a deadlock over the 24th day of the legislative session. Eagle River Republican Representative Kelly Merrick broke the deadlock by voting for Stutes. The vote was 21-19. Stutes briefly addressed the chamber after taking the gavel from temporary Speaker Josiah Patukuk from Ukiakvik. She said she would like to thank members for the trust they put in her.
And I look forward to uniting this House representative. We all need to be walk down the same side of the street, and I am very excited to be instrumental in bringing this House back together.
But the vote didn't resolve control over the House. Merrick announced that she had not joined the coalition that includes the other 20 people who voted for Stutes, leaving the House without a functioning majority caucus as of yesterday afternoon. Merrick said she felt the House could no longer delay extending Governor Mike Dunleavy's declaration of disaster. She also said she supported a fiscally conservative budget and passing a construction jobs bill. However, until there is a majority, the House won't have committees and won't be able to work on legislation. House members expressed uncertainty about what would happen next. Members who voted for Stutz say they're optimistic. A technical breakdown causing recent outages to the Coast Guard's emergency VHF radio towers across southeast Alaska has been fixed. That's according to Coast Guard Commander Lyle Kessler.
The network issue that was causing intermittent communications issues throughout the entire area was resolved. There are still the ongoing issues that we've had with a couple of the sites.
The Coast Guard's network of VHF towers allow its search and rescue command center to hear distress calls over Channel 16, but breakdowns in the relays can prevent Mayday calls from being received. Kessler said Friday there are still problems with the four towers across the southeast: Mount MacArthur, Deception Hills, Sukwan Island, and Althorpe Peak. There are also problems with two repeaters near Kodiak Island, Cape Gull, and Raspberry Island. Mariners are always encouraged to carry a secondary form of communication like an emergency position radio indicator beacon or EPIRB, satellite phone, or cell phone. Coast Guard Sector Juneau can be reached at 907-463-2980. Sitka has become a hotspot for landslide research since a deadly landslide hit the town in 2015. Much of that work had focused on landslide mitigation, including developing a landslide warning system. But as KCAW's Aaron McKinstry reports, a recent study in the Tongass headed in a different direction to examine how landslides impact the global carbon cycle.
How carbon moves around our planet is of particular interest to the scientific community, says researcher Bryce Vasek.
Part of that because carbon in the atmosphere is contributing to global warming, and we want to understand carbon pools and where carbon is stored and how carbon is transferred from, say, the vegetation to the oceans and to the atmosphere.
Vasek received his master's degree in geology from Portland State University last fall, and for his thesis, he honed in on a little studied part of the carbon cycle, landslides.
Carbon mobilizing events by landslides is not a super studied area. It's sort of a niche field within the carbon cycle.
The Tongass National Forest is one of the largest forest carbon sinks in the world. That's because its soils and vegetation, despite intensive logging in some areas, have been largely undisturbed by human activities in comparison to other places. Vasek says that made it an ideal setting for his research.
Because landslides occur pretty much annually within the Tongass National Forest, and it's very carbon dense. So it's a pretty ideal natural laboratory.
Through a combination of fieldwork, remote sensing technology, and computer work, Vasek estimated the amount of carbon being moved around by landslides in southeast Alaska. He found a single storm that triggers multiple slides can move as much carbon stored in vegetation and soils as the annual emissions from 45,000 vehicles. But it doesn't necessarily go into the atmosphere. Instead, much of it is deposited in valleys or further down hillsides where it gets buried and sequestered for long periods of time. About 20% ends up in water, including rivers, which can then carry it to the ocean's continental shelf and bury it for millions of years. It's possible that landslides actually help keep carbon out of the atmosphere. But Vasek says more data is needed before they can say that for sure.
I wanted to be like, look, the carbon's being moved by the landslides, and if enough is being moved and buried, then this is good for humans in the context of global warming. But there isn't enough research as to what occurs to the carbon after it is mobilized and deposited.
Vasek's research was part of a broader study funded by the National Science Foundation that looked at how landslides and the characteristics of forests influence one another. Portland State University's Adam Booth headed up that project in partnership with the Sitka Sound Science Center. He was also Vasek's thesis advisor and says Vasek's work is part of a broader effort to understand how climate change, the carbon cycle, and landslides interact.
How does changing temperature and precipitation affect landslides? How do those landslides affect carbon? And then ultimately, over a long time, what that carbon mobilized by the landslides is doing, where it goes, where it ends up getting deposited, affects Earth's global climate. carbon cycle over geologic time periods.
Fasick says he plans to publish his study in a biogeosciences journal in the next few months, so the data can be available to other researchers looking at landslides and the carbon cycle around the world. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Erin McKinstry.
The State of Alaska's Investment Authority Board has agreed to put $35 million towards the controversial Ambler Road project. The funding is matched by Ambler Metals, the mining company looking to use the road to access mineral deposits in the region. For Alaska's Energy Desk, Wesley Early has this report.
With the $35 million match from Ambler Metals, the $70 million infusion signals a major advancement in the development of the Ambler Road. The proposed project would run roughly 211 miles from the Dalton Highway to the Ambler Mining District in the Northwest Arctic Borough. Ambler Metals CEO Ramzi Fawaz says the funding is for pre-development work on the project. He says the permitting process will start sometime in the second half of the year, and he anticipates the process will take 2 to 3 years.
Permitting is one of those activities that get done in addition to the feasibility study and the surveys and so on. So that's part of the work that we need to do and the team needs to do before we get to an investment decision for the road.
The development agreement approved unanimously between the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority and Ambler Metals goes through December 2024. Subsistence advocates have filed lawsuits over the road, concerned that construction would impact the migration of caribou, a staple of the local Inupiaq diet in northwest Alaska. In its environmental assessment released last March, BLM officials noted potential impacts to wildlife migration and erosion, as well as local water and air quality. The process of getting a mine in the Ambler Mining District has garnered support from the Dunleavy administration and mining advocates, who say the project means high-paying jobs for Alaskans. Fawaz says they anticipate hiring more than 80 people for the field season work. Additionally, should construction be approved, another roughly 600 people would be hired for the construction of the road, and then about 400 for operations at the mine. Fawaz says Ambler Metals has been working with the local Nana Regional Native Corporation and the Northwest Arctic Borough in order to get locals employed.
Our hope and our aim is to train and recruit as many as we can from the borough, from the region, from our neighbors, to participate in this work, both before we get to an investment decision and after.
With large deposits of gold, silver, lead, and other minerals, Fawaz says the current projection is that the mine would last for 12 years. He says Ambler Metals hopes to find additional mineral deposits in the region to extend its lifetime to over 20 years. Lois Epstein is an engineer and Arctic Program Director for the Wilderness Society, a conservation group that is one of the plaintiffs in a lawsuit over the road. She says that AIDA's board of directors was not transparent in their process for approving the funding. During their meeting Wednesday, the board was in executive session for several hours to discuss the project ahead of the vote, but those sessions aren't open to the public. Epstein says the board spent very little time discussing the move publicly before returning to an executive session.
So if you're interested in all what kind of questions were asked, what kinds of details they focused on, did they even pay attention to the public comment period? You had no idea.
Epstein says environmentalists and some Alaska Native organizations have also critiqued the timing of AIDA's focus on the Ambler Road project, considering the COVID-19 pandemic, which has financially impacted thousands of Alaskans.
We think the biggest issue right now for the state is the pandemic and all the economic impacts that's having. And to the extent that AIDA could help mitigate those impacts, that's what they ought to be focusing on, not a long-term project like the Ambler Road.
Fawaz of Ambler Metals wouldn't comment on the pending lawsuits beyond saying the company is pleased with the federal permitting work thus far and believe they can operate responsibly in the region. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Wesley Early in Kotzebue.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Sunday is Valentine's Day, and seafood helps share the love. More after this.
Halibut and black cod buyers and sellers, simplify your sales online from one location at the Seafood Auction. Visit seafoodauction.net.
Sunday is Valentine's Day, a tradition that dates back to a Roman festival in the year 496 to celebrate the start of spring. More recently, lovers choose lobster as the top Valentine's Day dish to share with that special someone. Shrimp and crab legs also get the nod as romantic meals on one of the busiest dining out days for U.S. restaurants. In a national survey by Harris Interactive, chefs called lobster an exotic delicacy that results in an intimate moment because it's handheld and shareable. They called all shellfish a catalyst for connection like no other food. The links between food and love have a long history, including the belief that oysters enhance male desire and performance. Until recently, there was no scientific evidence to back that up, but new studies by Florida and Italian researchers reveal that oysters contain compounds that prompt the release of sexual hormone, and oysters also are loaded with zinc, a key nutrient for testosterone production. And two women authors are touting omega-3 fish oils as serious libido lifters. In her book, Can You Eat Your Way to Better Sex, Dr. Yvonne Fulbright told Fox News that fish oils stimulate the release of sex hormones. Author Marina Lindbergh also sings the praises of fish oil in her book, The Orgasmic Diet. She says fish oil, similar to Viagra, increases nitric oxide levels in artery linings, which increase blood flow to the brain and sex organs. Pacific oysters pack a special omega punch at 1,700 micrograms, the same as Alaska king salmon. And the Alaska seafood with the most omegas of all? Sablefish. Whatever your favorite, share the love on Valentine's Day and every day. Find links at alaskafishradio.com and on Facebook and Twitter. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods, serving Alaska's fishing communities since 1910. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
KMXT's Island Messenger, supported in part by the Kodiak Daily Mirror, your hometown newspaper since 1940. Now online at www.kodiakdailymirror.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for the 12th day of February. It is a Friday in the year 2021. The sun rose today at 8:46. It will set again at 6:03, giving us 9 hours and 16 minutes of precious daylight. That is a gain of 4 minutes and 46 seconds compared to yesterday. Looking at local tides, we have a high tide coming up here on the east side at 2:13 p.m. That will be a 9.75-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 8:48 p.m. of minus 1.2 feet, big minus tide, followed by a high tide at 3:14 a.m. of 8.19 feet. Our next low tide will be at 8:47 tomorrow morning, 1.5 feet. Looking over at the west side, these are Euganic Pass tides. You have a high tide coming up at 2:47 p.m. That will be a 16.5-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 9:16 this evening of minus 2.37 feet. Your next high tide will be at 3:34 in the morning of 15.9 feet, and your low tide on the west side for tomorrow morning will be at 9:28 and be 0.72 feet. 35 degrees presently in Kodiak. We're looking for snow likely this afternoon and evening. Cloudy skies, high near 38 today with east wind gusting as high as 40 miles per hour today. Total daytime snow accumulation less than 1 inch is what they're saying. Snow likely before 7 p.m. tonight, then snow showers after that. Then more snow likely after 1 a.m. Mostly cloudy skies overnight with a low around 34. East wind to 25 miles per hour, could gust as high as 35. Chance of precipitation 70% overnight, and they're talking about maybe a half an inch of snow accumulation overnight tonight. For tomorrow, snow likely before 7 a.m., then rain and snow between 7 a.m. and 1 p.m., then just plain rain after 1 p.m., high near 39 tomorrow, east wind to 25, should increase to 30 miles per hour tomorrow afternoon and could gust as high as 40 miles per hour tomorrow. Chance of precipitation a mere 80%. I'm talking about maybe a half an inch of rainy, snowy glop tomorrow too. Rain Saturday night, low around 37, east wind to 30, gusting as high as 40. And more rain on Sunday, mainly before 1 p.m., high near 40, east wind decreasing to 15 miles per hour Sunday afternoon. Mariners, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A front over the Central Gulf will weaken by Friday night. Another front will approach the Western Gulf Saturday morning and move into the Northern Gulf Saturday night. Marmot Island to Sitka, Kodiak's east side offshore. We're looking for small craft advisory through Saturday. East wind to 30 knots today, seas to 20 feet. For tonight, east wind to 25 knots, seas coming down to 16 feet. And for tomorrow, east wind 30, seas 15 feet. Saturday night, southeast 30, seas 17 feet. Over in the Shelikof and Kodiak's west side, gale warning on Saturday. East wind to 30 knots right now in the Shelikof and seas to 9 feet. For tomorrow, look for east wind to 35 knots in the Shelikof, seas to 8 feet. And for Saturday night, east wind to 35 knots and seas to 8 feet in the Shelikof. Inside waters, Chiniak and Marmot Bay, small craft advisories for both. Chiniak Bay, east wind to 30 knots right now, should diminish to 20 knots this afternoon. Seas 10 feet, should subside to 7 feet this afternoon in Chiniak Bay. For tomorrow, look for east wind to 30 knots and seas to 11 feet. Up in Marmot Bay, east wind to 30 knots right now, seas to 12 feet, should subside to 9 feet this afternoon. For tomorrow, look for east wind to 30 knots and seas to 12 feet in Marmot Bay. Kodiak's Arts Council is presenting Letters Aloud, Love Me or Leave Me, a reader's theater show celebrating the written word and highlighting historical letters of longing, love, and redemption. From awkward courtship to horrible breakups to loves of a lifetime and lifetimes of love, Letters Aloud explores it all in letters that range from steamy to sweet. Hear from the likes of Mark Twain, Frida Kahlo, Charles Bukowski, George Carlin, Virginia Woolf, and Napoleon Bonaparte. Featuring an ensemble cast of Kodiak actors, Letters Aloud will run for 3 live-streamed broadcasts over Valentine's Day weekend. The show is virtual only with no live audiences. For more details and tickets, go to www.kodiakarts.org. That's www.kodiakarts.org. If you have questions, call the Arts Council at 942-5840 or 486-5291. Vaccine clinic is available for eligible VA-enrolled veterans. You must call to schedule an appointment. Call 257-4700. That's 257-4700. Or call 257-6789. Appointments will be from 9:30 a.m. to 2 on Thursday, February 18th, and occur at the Canna Clinic on East Rezanov. Appointments will be for scheduling the first dose of Moderna vaccine. The VA will return Thursday, March 18th to provide the second dose. But again, those two numbers to call, 257-4700 or 257-6789.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.